At Jersey Mike's, you can elevate any sub by getting the juice. Red wine, vinegar, and an olive oil blend. It's how a Jersey Mike's sub gets its exquisite zing and how bites get boosted. The juice adds a certain something extra, an exclamation on top of the freshly sliced meats and toppings, the kind of exclamation you can eat. Order Jersey Mike's subs on our mobile app and get delivery right to your home or pick up from your nearest Jersey Mike's sub location. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above.
The following program is sponsored by What's Right, What's Left Ministries and is responsible for its content.
Portions of the following program may be pre-recorded.
I am Pastor Ernie Sanders, the voice of the Christian resistance. Stay tuned. My radio broadcast, What's Right, What's Left, is coming up right now.
Independence, Ohio.
Changed our life for the better in many different ways.
Heard around the world every Monday through Friday.
Pastor Sanders is always years ahead of the rest of the media, telling you exactly what they're covering up.
This is What's Right, What's Left.
I tune in every chance I get to hear exactly what's going on with the voice of the Christian resistance.
Unabashedly cutting through the rhetoric by exposing the hard topics facing our society and world.
A lot of the other news media don't pick up the news items like he does.
And bringing to light the enemy of freedom who are out to steal your rights, your children, and enslaving you.
You really get the truth out. I can tune into your show and hear the unvarnished truth. Thank you.
This is What's Right, What's Left with Pastor Ernie Sanders.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of What's Right, What's Left on this, what day is it, 23rd?
Yes.
23rd. 23rd day of June, right?
Yes.
All righty, folks. We have, he's on the board, but he's not bored. He is courageous, but he's not contagious, I don't think. And that is Courageous Craig.
Let's hope not, but good evening, everybody.
All righty. Right here, pretty much near live in the studio, we have Randy Gay.
Hey. Be blessed, no stress, everybody.
And Lisa Hickman.
Good evening, everyone.
And I think they're after my job. That's what they're doing here. And you say, who would want it, right? Okay. And we have a special guest. He's probably scared after hearing all this by now. But we have Pamela Acker with us. And Pamela is, she's the author. She's a biologist with the Colby Center for Research. And I've heard that she's a pretty smart lady. Are you there, Pam?
I am here, sir. Thank you.
We're going to get right into a Bible study, and you have a question or a comment, just jump in and ask it. Don't be afraid to sound off, all right?
All right.
Okay. Well, the title of the message was The Fatherhood of God and Man, and we started off in Malachi. We talked about the fatherhood, how God the Father was the father of all humanity. And then we went to Jeremiah and showed how he was the father of Israel. And we went to Romans 13 and showed he was the fatherhood of the Gentiles. And John chapter 1 of Christians. And tonight we're looking at the duties of a father toward his children. And we started in Genesis 37 and we looked at love. The duty of a father is love. And tonight we're going to take a look in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. With 11 and 12, and we're going to look at the guidance, how a father is to guide and to warn his children. And Randy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead and read verses 10 through 12.
Starting at 10 through 12, we got it, okay.
Yep, 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, 10 through 12.
All right. Ye are witnesses, and God also, how holy and justly and unblameably we behaved ourselves among you that believe. As you know how we exhorted and comforted and charged every one of you as a father doth his children, that you would walk worthy of God who hath called you unto his kingdom and glory.
Okay, so he's doing two things here. One, he's talking about the responsibilities of a father here And as he say, as you know how we exhorted and comforted and charged every one of you. Now, he's referring to, first of all, how they walked as an example, how holy and justly and unblameable we have behaved ourselves among you that believe. So they said, look, we did our very best to set the best example, okay? And this example is like a father towards his children. We treated you as you are children. And so, but the idea was that he was to do what? First of all, they were to guide them. They were to warn them. But here, the point was that they were to live. Well, the idea was to live in such a manner as to, in everything they do, glorify God. That was their whole purpose. Okay, God made us, our Father made us to what? To serve him and to glorify him and to honor him and to please him, huh?
That's right.
Yes.
And so with that, let's turn over to Hebrews chapter 12.
Okay.
And in Hebrews chapter 12, we look at, we'll start with verse 4 and read all the way through 13.
Okay. You have not resisted on the blood striving against sin, and you have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If you endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening for the present seems to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterwards it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Wherefore, lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way. But let it rather be healed. Follow peace with all men and holiness.
No, that's good right there. You can stop. Now, so we go back here, and here at this point, what we're looking at is chastisements. Fathers will chastise their children. And does a good father chastise his children because he's mean, cruel, evil, or does he do it for their own good?
For their good.
For your own good.
Okay, so at this point here, when he says, you have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin, what was the situation with the Hebrews? The Hebrews, when Christianity was spreading, it looked like it was the cool thing to do. I don't know if I want to use those terms, but people were becoming Christians. And now, again, remember, he's speaking to the Jews here. And then, and why? Well, one of the reasons the Romans at first considered Christianity to be a segment of the Jewish religion, just a part of the Jewish religion, which was a legal religion according to Rome. But then that changed, and when that changed came the persecution. So they were being persecuted, and he's telling them, you have not yet resisted unto blood. It means to be in,
to be killed, right?
Killed, right?
To be killed.
And so he continues. He tells them to continue, though. Continue doing what you're doing. Continue striving. Continue resisting the world and walking in the way you have. And then he says, "For you have forgotten the exhortation which has spoken unto you as unto children." My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For in whom the Lord loveth, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receiveth. Now, here we know that earlier he had warned them, about those that were saying, well, you know, it was a whole lot easier to just to practice Judaism. The persecution wasn't there, and let's go back to that. Let's go back to Judaism. And he was telling them, you know, you don't want to do that. You don't want to deny the Savior. And so here he's talking about those that have done such a thing or thought of doing that. God will, well, he'll chastise them. He'll scourge us. Now, when he talked about scourging every son, scourging, was that a pretty severe? It was
yes.
a pretty severe punishment, wasn't it?
Yes.
So now he goes on to say, if you endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if you be without chastisement, wherefore all are partakers, then you are bastards and not sons. Well, remember what we talked about earlier there over in Malachi, here where those people were saying, God, you know, we understand that God was a little upset with them because they were telling him, look, we understand what's going on. We're hip to this. We know that you're saying one thing. You're talking about blessed are the meek and the poor, but we're seeing what you're doing. We're seeing that that you're blessing the wicked. We're seeing that the wicked are wealthy, the wicked are powerful. And so we get it, God. You're saying one thing, but you're doing another. Now, wasn't a smart thing to say to God, was it?
No, no.
Okay, here now, God is talking about chastisement. When you have people today who are professing Christians, they go out, and we gave some examples of some of those people that had done earlier. I think Chris Farley was one who had professed to be a Christian, and then after he went on 700 shows and all these different programs, you know, giving his testimony, he turned and went back to homosexuality, turned back to his sin, and he was taken home, boom, right away. He was taken home. And so why does God chastise you? Why does he take you out instead of letting you continue in your sin?
Well, I think if nothing else, you don't lose all your rewards, and obviously you can't lose your salvation, mm-hmm. but you certainly can lose all your rewards, and so you're less of a detriment to yourself.
Yes. Well, you're right about that. He does it for your good, but something even more so is
dishonoring
the fact
God.
More so is the fact that what he does is he doesn't want to be dishonored himself.
Yes.
God will not allow himself to be mocked, and he will not allow himself to be dishonored. And so when you have people also, like, remember John Lennon, for example,
yeah.
okay, how he had come back, and he turned into the communism and made the statements that, look, I'm more popular than Jesus. Okay?
Yeah, that's right, he did.
He made that, mm-hmm. that statement, and that wasn't a smart thing to do, was it?
No,
not at all.
he compared himself with God, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
Yes.
And so he goes on and he says, I'll hear that they are bastards and not sons. And so here, that is another application too. The Apostle Paul, when it referred to, remember he's speaking to the Hebrews here, over in Romans 9, when he referred to those who were, they were the seed of Abraham, but not the children of Abraham.
Right.
In other words, they were in the flesh and the bloodline. They were Jews, but they were not spiritually the children of Abraham. And so here, what he's referring to, too, when you see people like, George Soros, for example. George Soros is an extremely wicked man. Anthony Fauci, okay. Bill Gates, these are extremely wicked men. Now, when asked, well, why does God allow such wicked people? Why does he allow them to have that, you know, to be billionaires and have all of what he's having and do such evil things? And the answer was what? That God allows them to have a little pleasure for a season, because once they die, things go south, and they go south big time, don't they?
Yes.
And so here, he's talking about that. So these people are considered to be bastards, and those that have, you go out and have a profession of faith. Remember, Jesus said, many are called, but few are chosen. Many will come, but few will enter. They have a profession of faith, but they don't have a possession of salvation, do they?
No.
Okay, so then he goes on to say, furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh that have corrected us, and we gave them reference. Shall we not much rather be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For verily, for a few days they chastened us after their own pleasure. Well, he's not talking about, you know, they did it because they liked it. They did it, okay, in the sense that they knew that they were doing the right thing by chastising their children for being disobedient to God and to the Word of God. So he goes on to say here, now no chastisement for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward he yielded a peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Wherefore lift up thy hands which hang down, and thy feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed. And so here, what he's talking about is that when he says, again, wherefore lift up your hands which hang down. God is only, he's not only what you would refer to as a disciplining parent, if you will, and he's kind of like, in a sense, God is, when he exhorts us, well, like maybe a coach. Or like
that's
a,
right,
or like a sergeant in the army, and so here he's doing that. He's encouraging them. He's exhorting them. Wherefore, lift up thy hands which hang down, and thy feeble knees. In other words, let's get it done here. Let's get going back and make a straight path for your feet. So there you go. Let's turn over to Ephesians 5, and in Ephesians 5. Starting with verse 22, and read all the way through chapter 6, verse 4.
Chapter 5, verse 22.
Yeah, and read it through 6, 4.
Okay. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let wives be to their own husbands in everything. And husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify it and cleanse it with the washing of the water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot nor wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever hated his own flesh, but nourished and cherished it even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh and of his bones. And for this cause shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and the two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife, even as himself, and the wife see that she reverenceth her husband.
Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, that thou mayest live long on earth. And you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. So here the point of it is a father's duty towards the mother of his children. So he's looking at that, and so here he starts out, and he's addressing the wives, submit yourselves unto your own husband. Is that a popular message today?
No. Absolutely not.
Okay. It's not. Pam, you can jump in and do some commentary there if you want.
Well, I could give you a little bit of commentary from a Catholic perspective, but certainly I would say that it's a very much misunderstood teaching.
So when he's referring to, I mean, today, women who are submissive to their husband, by society, they're considered to be, I don't know, less than women. I mean, when you're talking about, I think one of the most noble professions is to be a mother and a homemaker, okay? And I don't have a problem with a housewife, you know, those words. But it's really discouraged today. Well, for example, too, motherhood. You just heard recently Janis Yellen, the so-called, well, I guess what she's Federal Reserve czar. And when she came out and said, she echoed Mrs. Clinton, Chelsea Clinton's statement that abortion is good for the economy. And so here, Yellen came out and said, look, abortion is good for the economy. If you're pregnant, kill it and go to work. Now, that's really, that's the heart of a mother, isn't it? You see, but there, that is the mindset you have. And the feminist movement, I think, is one of the worst things that's ever happened. It's been one of the biggest curses, you know, on this country, on mankind. What do you think? Do you want to comment on that, Pam?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say that feminism actually does violence to the interior of a woman, because God made us with a particular intention in mind. And even, you know, the way that we're built physically, like, reflects that. And what you said earlier is very beautiful about, you know, motherhood being such a high calling, because, you know, if I'm an engineer and I build a bridge, you know, and I do it wrong, you know, somebody might lose their life in a temporal sense. But if I'm a mother and I don't raise my children correctly, they could lose their lives in a spiritual sense. And the salvation of a single soul is far more important than the greatest works that engineers or scientists or doctors could do. And we have it kind of backwards. You know, we look at all these people, you know, who make money or succeed in a temporal sense and think that, you know, well, they've got something going for them. But the reality is that the mothers who, you know, sweat and sacrifice and make a house a home, do so much more good to their spouse and their children than we could ever count up or tally.
All right.
But this talks about the man loving his wife like Christ loved the church, and he gave himself for it. And my point is that this is a man that's putting his wife and his family in front of himself.
Right.
That's it. That's what I'm saying. That, no, I know that. I wanted to make that clear.
Right.
That this is a man that he's given himself, that they're first, and then he comes. And that's not the prototype we see in the world.
Today, you've got the effeminization of too many men out there.
Well, absolutely.
Yes.
Here, I mean, you have these things today called hot wives. They're called cougars. There's, I don't know, other things out there. In fact, just recently they had those three women they referred to as about open marriages, all right?
Yeah.
And they were supposed to be, they asked them, what is the term hot wife? You're a hot wife. So what does that mean to you? One says that I'm sexually liberated, okay? The other one talked about...
Well, but then you have the new term, poly.
The what?
Poly.
That's different. A poly is different. I think that's where, but that means many.
No.
Now there's
you don't have to be married to be poly.
No, that means many. The word poly means many.
I know poly means many. Yeah. Okay, yeah, but that's what there's a general term now called poly.
Okay, so, but I had to laugh because when they asked the three of them, one said, "I'm sexually liberated." The other one said, I can't remember. But the third one said, "We're whores." And this is hot wife. I had to laugh. Okay. But here now, let me jump over very quickly to 1 Timothy chapter 2. And Paul, the Apostle Paul, is talking. He said, "In like manner also the women adorn themselves with modest apparel, shamefacedness, sobriety, not with braided hair, gold or pearls or costly array, which becometh women professing godliness with good works. Let the women learn in silence with all subjection, but I suffer not a woman to teach nor to usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence, for Adam was first formed, then Eve. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived was in the transgression." Now he gets to the whole meat of this thing. "Notwithstanding, shall be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith and charity and holiness and sobriety." In other words, he was making a point. Now, she doesn't get salvation through childbirth, but what he's referring to there is the greatest ministry that a woman can have is to raise her children in the admonition of the Lord,
yes.
To be a submissive wife. Okay, and so we go back to where we left off in Ephesians, and I'm just going to jump down here to "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise." Do you know what the promise was? The promise was if they honored their mother and father, they wouldn't get killed.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. And then you go, "That it may be well with thee and mayest live long on earth. You fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." You can just cut a child's heart out with words.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And I remember a young girl whose father, she was 15, her father told her that there's nothing about you that's good. Nothing about you. There's everything about you is dirty. And it just tore her apart, right? Another time a father told his son, You'll never amount to anything, okay? You just don't have it in you, okay? Those are words that can just tear a child apart, and a good father will never do that, and he won't provoke his children by saying such things or doing such things. I knew a father one time that thought by telling his sons, "You'll never do it, you can't, you're not up to it, you just don't." His idea was by doing that, it would encourage or would exhort his son to prove him wrong. But that's not the way you do it. That's not the way you exhort somebody.
Right.
We'll be back right after this. Don't go away. More to go.
This baby die,
precious baby,
tell me why should this baby talk, little darling?
I have my own life to live. Besides, it's my right. I don't have time for that kid, and I don't want those stretch marks. It's my life. It's my body. It's my choice.
Listen to that heart. I've been born again. Now I can't let my baby die.
Precious baby.
Now I can't let my baby die.
Little darling,
you were made in secret.
Secret.
Woven in the womb. Jesus came to give us life.
You will be born soon.
Tell me why, oh why, oh why should the babies die?
Precious babies.
Tell me why, oh why, oh why should the babies die?
All right, there you go. That's called Heartbeat. And we're back with Pamela Acker, and she is a biologist and an author. And Pam, you're here tonight to talk about abortion and the kill shots, all right, what they call vaccines. And
sure.
Randy's got an article there. Just right here the headlines, Art, Randy.
Sure. It says, while the COVID virus mostly spared children, Dr. Fauci did not. Tony Fauci killed from 300,000 to 900,000 children with his lockdowns, mostly in Africa. Says the COVID virus has next to zero chance of affecting children. However, it says as of February 2022, 882 children had died from COVID virus in the U.S. A vast majority of these deaths were children who died with the virus, not from the virus. During the same period in 2021, only three children had died from the seasonal flu, a disease that typically takes the lives of hundreds of children. But while the COVID virus spared children, Dr. Fauci did not. The evil NIAID tyrant killed from 280,000 to 911,000 children with his economics lockdowns in Africa. His economic policies in Africa. Excuse me. A new study shows that 280,000 to 911,000 were killed by Dr. Fauci's strange lockdowns. And this is in low and middle income countries. A 5% reduction in GDP per capita in 2020 was estimated to have a cause of an additional 282,996 deaths in Africa with children under five. At 10%, obviously, that would have doubled. At 15%, that would triple, and that would go anywhere from the 282,000 plus all the way up to the 900,000. Nearly half of all the potential under five lives lost in the low middle income countries were estimated to have occurred in sub-Saharan Africa.
All right, let her go ahead and comment on that. Go ahead, Pam.
So, you know, this is interesting that you should bring this up. I thought I was on here to talk about the connection between abortion and vaccines.
Yeah, well, that's so that is true.
My expertise. I don't follow Fauci's policy in Africa, so I can't really comment on it.
Okay, but go ahead and talk about the abortion. I just read an article yesterday from Natural News that said 90% of those women that were pregnant and gotten the jab had miscarriages.
Yeah, National News is not always 100% a reliable source. So there's definitely, you know, anecdotal evidence that there's a higher risk of miscarriage with use of COVID vaccines in particular. But the actual statistics on that are super hard to nail down. As you know, throughout this entire debacle that we've called, all of the lockdowns and everything, the statistics on, who's had COVID, who's died from COVID, who's, had an adverse reaction to the shot, who's died from the shot, who's had a miscarriage from the shot, all of these things were not, they were not tabulated accurately. So when you start throwing around statistics, there's like not necessarily a lot of meaning to any of that. And it's unfortunate, but, both sides, I think, kind of struggle to make their case just looking at the numbers, because there's not enough documentation, because the data is not being recorded in a way that allows us to sort out and tease out causality, if that makes any sense.
It makes a lot of sense, but I think the bottom line is these vaccines are, these are not vaccines at all. They're experimental, and literally what they really are, they're bioweapons. And we've had four of the top virologists in the world on this radio program, and they've all said the very same thing. And they're bioweapons. They are not vaccines. So, back in the 80s, all the way back in the 80s, we were doing programs on the global depopulation program. And this is what's happening. But people, the mindset, this is something to so many people, the very thought that people want to depopulate the planet. And I've sat in their meetings. I've sat in the meetings with the World Health Organization, Sierra Club, Planned Parenthood, the ACLU, where they openly discussed ways of depopulating the planet. And of course, abortion, euthanasia. But one of the major ways was these so-called vaccines to depopulate the planet. So why, and we've been talking about this for years, and we're not the only ones. So why are people still today so ignorant? They don't get it. They don't want to they don't want to acknowledge the fact that, yes, there are people that are so evil, they want to eliminate the vast majority of people in this world. What do you think?
Well, I think that it's hard to chuck the things that you've grown up with. And so I talk a lot about creation to people who've grown up being taught that it doesn't really matter whether you believe you came from a monkey or you came from Adam. And I believe it matters a lot. I believe we came from Adam, and that's something that shapes our faith right down to the core, but talking to people about it, they'll throw up these things that they've seen the pictures of dinosaurs in the books since they were little kids, and so what about this? What about that? But people have also been told from the time, that they're old enough to hear it, that vaccines are safe, vaccines are effective, vaccines are how we prevent communicable disease, vaccines are what got rid of smallpox, vaccines are what got rid of polio. Do you want to go back to an iron lung? People have a hard time getting out of that paradigm. I actually used to work in vaccine development at a university, and we were trying to develop an HIV vaccine. And at that time, I was super supportive of vaccine development, because I had bought into the whole idea that this is how we prevent infectious diseases and how we save lives. But it's not the only way to save lives. And it's almost getting people to sort of shift out of that mentality of this is the only protection that we have against X, Y, or Z disease is a really hard paradigm shift for a lot of people. And if you're stuck on the mantra that the vaccines are safe, the vaccines are effective, the vaccines are how we keep kids from dying, it's really hard to see them as what they are, which, I try not to ascribe, too nefarious motives to people that I don't know and I've never met, but, certainly they're a pharmaceutical cash cow. If you can guarantee that you're going to have, a number of patients at a certain age receive, this many doses of a medication, you've got a pretty steady income, and so that's not a thing that's easy to shift when you've built this entire sort of mindset around, this is a necessary medical intervention. We don't know how we'd survive without it. So I think that people look at that, and then they're not even remotely open to hearing things about, you know, birth control vaccines that the WHO has been working on since the 1970s, and, you know, recently tried to deploy in Kenya on unsuspecting population of childbearing women. You know, like they're not even open to hearing that, because they're like, no, but you don't understand, like, vaccines are safe and effective.
All right, I remember sitting in one of the meetings with the WHO and all of these, and they were talking about papilloma virus in Africa, and they were talking about how they had used this papilloma virus, and eight times the vaccine, and I remember them saying that eight times as many young girls died from the vax that actually died from the papilloma virus. And this was something that they were pleased.
Surprised me.
They were happy about this, okay? And so, mm-hmm. And then again, you have to, you know, I'm not big on these vaccines at all, but we're not talking about vaccines when you're talking about this COVID. I had Robert Malone on the program. He invented it, the mRNA, and he didn't call it a vaccine. It's a bioweapon. Now, here's the guy that invented it. He said, don't take it. It'll kill you. Why?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't take it, you know, for a number of reasons. I mean, regardless of what you call it, and I think people kind of get a little too, maybe a little too eager to try to relabel it. I've been working in vaccine development and interested in vaccine development for, you know, a couple of decades, not as long as you've been following the stuff with the WHO, but... they've been working on genetic vaccines for a long time, and nobody was trying to redefine them as not vaccines at that point. So, you know, it is what it is. It's a you know, string of mRNA that causes your body to produce the spike protein. And there's a couple of reasons why that's a really bad idea. You know, one is that there's actually evidence now that's been published in the scientific literature that in the lab, at least in test tubes, this piece of mRNA can integrate into the human genome. So it can actually end up stuck in some of the cells that pick it up. That was a side effect that people were predicting at the beginning. I wasn't sure how feasible that was based on what I, you know, studied about cell biology, but they've shown it happens in cell lines in the lab. So that's it. That's a huge concern. You know, because if you're taking this in your body, we don't know, you know, what's happening to in terms of whether it's genetically modifying you or not, you know, so that's something that needs to be assessed. But something that really stood out to me from the beginning, because I was interested actually in developing edible vaccines. And so to do that, you actually have to get a plant to produce an appropriate amount of vaccine antigen, of the active ingredient of the vaccine. And, you know, when they tried to do that, they had to insert, you know, genetic information into these organisms. And what they found was that they didn't make the same amount of protein, even when they injected them with the same amount of RNA or DNA. And so you can give people the same dose of mRNA vaccine, but you can't control how much spike protein that individual is going to make. You know, so you can't actually control the dosage of vaccine antigen that you're giving to this person. So you've got the problem that you might mess up the genome. You've got the problem that you can't control dosage. And then you have the problem that the spike protein, and that there's paper after paper after paper after paper that demonstrates this. The spike protein is actually the part of the virus that causes the physiological damage. It causes damage to your circulatory system. And, you know, this is where the myocarditis and the pericarditis and those side effects come from with the vaccine. And so we're taking something that might potentially genetically modify people, and we can't determine the dosage, and we now know that the protein that we're actually causing people to produce in their bodies is harmful. Regardless of what label we slap on it, whether you want to call it a bioweapon or you want to call it, you know, a medical intervention, it's dangerous. It's absolutely 100% dangerous. And so I think it's like super important to, you know, make sure that people know this from an objective perspective. You know, this isn't just kind of like, you know, people are out here trying to twist words or redefine things. Like, it, when you look at what this actually does in the body, it's bad news.
Well, you know, we've had Sherry Tenpenny with us here, and several others that have taken and shown us the results of some of this. And I've watched some of the people that have taken these I call them kill shots, where they shake. They can't stop shaking. They're flaying their hands around.
Yeah.
And
it can cause neurological damage as well.
Okay, but...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, I noticed, too, one thing, too. Not one size fits all. There's different, from what I understand, you have several different strengths of these vaccines. They're not all the same. And some are much, much more worse than others. According to what I've seen, there's anywhere between 4 and 6 made by Pfizer. In other words, the strengths of these vaccines, they're not all alike. So you can't expect to get the same results, when you poke people with these things, can you?
Well, you can't, even if they were all the same strength, you can't expect to get the same results when you poke them with people for the reason I just was trying to explain, which is that, you know, you can't, when you insert genetic information into an organism, you can't control exactly how much genetic information is picked up by the cells, and then you can't control exactly how much protein is made from that genetic information. So you could give, you know, you and me and 6 million people the exact same amount of mRNA, and which is hard to determine anyway. So, like, it just, you know, you're dealing with a molecule that's you're looking at such a small molecule in such small doses, and RNA degrades really rapidly, and if you have, you know, the slightest bit of temperature fluctuation, or, you know, improper storage, or your buffer's a little bit off, you've got degradation of the material, or, you know, too much material, or whatever. But even if you could standardize it perfectly, you're not going to make the same amount of spike protein as I'm going to make, because your physiology is different, and because of just, you know, the even just things like the way that the vaccine is delivered, because improper vaccine administration can cause, you know, changes to the way that you end up producing the spike protein and where you end up producing the spike protein. So there's just so many different variable factors that could affect it, what becomes your effective dosage, that this is just, even if it was perfect and everything's totally and completely above board, you know, you're still not going to see the same results in the same people. And with the shaking and the neurological kinds of things, you know, there's the mRNA itself and the lipid nanoparticles will both cross the blood-brain barrier. This has been demonstrated in animal models. And so there's some thought that the improper vaccine administration can actually get this stuff delivered directly into your veins. And if that happens, it can circulate systemically. It can cross the blood-brain barrier. It can cause neurological damage, and we don't know how permanent that is. You know, there's just no long-term safety analysis of any of this at all, and whether people are going to recover from serious side effects like the shaking or like the myocarditis and the pericarditis. We have no idea. I mean, I would presume they're probably not going to recover, but there's no evidence, you know, to show that there's any reason to think that these things are reasonable to be injecting in, you know, widespread in the population right now.
Okay, look, I set it at home in our medicine cabinet. We have, well, they're natural. I mean, I have just vitamins, things that I take, and maybe so there might be some weight loss. I mean, over the counter. These are all over the counter things, and on each one of them, it'll tell you, do not take this if you're pregnant. Okay, do not take this if you're pregnant. So here on all of these over-the-counter things, they tell you don't take if you're pregnant. And so here, these are just common everyday things. And yet, where's the common sense that it would take when people are dying left and right from these, what I call the poisonous pokes? Where's the common sense with these women that have gone out being pregnant and taking this thing that's not really, by definition, as far as I know, a vaccine. It's a bioweapon. So what is wrong with them? I mean, I don't know. There's something that's missing there. I guess the same thing if you're going to go out and abort your baby and kill your baby. I don't know. How do you explain that?
Well, Well, again, I mean, we're kind of like in the weeds here, so I'm not really sure. I'm just not really sure what I'm on here to talk about, but you can argue all day long about what people's intentions are, and I always tell people I can't answer why questions. You know, I can't answer why someone would choose to do something unsafe. I can come up with six ways to Sunday of you know, having some sort of words to put on it to maybe try to explain it, but like, you know, fear would seem to be probably a motivating factor. It seems like a lot of people end up doing a lot of really dumb things out of fear in this whole COVID situation. But you know, I can't explain to you why you would suspend judgment and say, you know, well, I'm pregnant, I'm not willing to take, you know, ibuprofen, but I'm going to go take a vaccine that has no long-term safety data on it at all. Can't possibly have any long-term safety data on it. I don't know what would make somebody make a decision like that.
Let me ask you this. In your opinion, do you think the medical association, AMA and others, have taken a huge credibility shot? I mean, they've lost a lot of credibility. I know a lot of people that I've talked to said, you know, I just don't trust my doctor anymore. These doctors that encourage people to get this shot, and yet people are getting sick, people are dying. You're seeing them happening, even though they're trying to keep it quiet. So, in your opinion, do you think the medical association has taken a huge shot where it comes to credibility?
I mean, in my opinion, I think a lot of the people that have been involved in this whole situation have lost a lot of credibility. And the people that I talk to, you know, as I travel around, and even just people that I know locally, are less and less willing to trust their health to their doctor, and more interested in investigating alternative forms of health, healthcare, which can be kind of dicey as well, you know, and not necessarily just from a natural perspective. But so I would say that, you know, certainly, you know, I would almost hope that they've taken a hit to their credibility, because anybody that would push something like this doesn't deserve really to have credibility. But at the same time, you know, I think that people's memories are relatively short. They kind of want things to go back to normal. And I don't know how much, you know, sort of lasting incredulity there's going to be next time there's a big scare. You know, so I tend to be a consummate skeptic and just say, you know, yeah, for now it seems that there's some loss in credibility, but you know, I don't know how long that will last. People have short memories.
Well, just recently, the Supreme Court candidate, if you will, that and I'm having a little memory loss here, what her name was, I know, but anyhow, she said she didn't know what a woman was. She didn't know. When it asked, do you know what a woman is, she didn't know what a woman was. And recently, the so-called AMA said they didn't know how to define gender, what gender is. Is there, I mean, does that seem to you to be kind of, I don't know, think about that for a minute. We're coming up to a break. There seems to be.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, go ahead.
Pam, I want to ask you a question, which you do when we come back. Would you explain to the audience why they have to use aborted baby parts when they form vaccines?
All right, we will be back.
Would you do that, please?
Right after this.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
With a whole lot more. Don't go away. More to come. And a lot more to come. So don't go away. We'll be right back after this.
Fight the fight.
Thank you for listening to What's Right, What's Left, the voice of the Christian resistance. To support this ministry, head to wrwl.org. That's wrwl.org. Mail your donations to What's Right, What's Left Ministries, 14781 Sperry Road, Newberry, Ohio, 44065. If you missed part of tonight's program, you can check out the podcast at thewordcleveland.com. Thewordcleveland.com. Once again, thank you for listening and supporting What's Right, What's Left Ministries, the voice of the Christian resistance. Stay tuned. The second hour is coming up next.